Talk with your host, Eric Jackson. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And now, here's your host, Eric Jackson.
All right. Good afternoon and happy Tuesday to you. This is Let's Talk. I'm your host, Eric Jackson. And today we have another outstanding topic to get going. To talk about that relates to everyone on the planet. And that's for dang on sure. But before we go ahead and get into our topic, if you want to join in the conversation, you can dial in at 347-838-8622. Email me at ericletstalk@gmail.com, or you can hit me in my chat room. It is open, and we can have one heck of a conversation there as well. Now, with that being out of the way, now, before we get started on today's topic, I do want to say let's be respectful to everyone, you know, no calling each other out of names, and, you know, let's have a grown folk conversation, okay? That's all we ask, because this is Let's Talk, so we're going to talk about it, but let's be respectful. That's all I'm asking. Now, today is Tuesday, July 31st, 2012, and you are listening to Let's Talk, and our topic today is racial harmony in the U.S., does it really exist? Now, I know somebody really going to get started on this one. Because that's a dang good question, huh? I know some of y'all automatically going to say, does it exist? Heck no, it don't exist. Really? Are you sure about that? I mean, today we're going to discuss the status of racial relationships, you know, in this supposed to be our great country, the free world, you know, as they call it, you know, the world. I don't know since when the United States became the world, but I guess to everybody outside the United States, it is the world. You know, but being realistic now, you know, let's go ahead and admit that, you know, some of this relationship between the races has not always been the best. No, some of them just haven't been on the best terms. We know this from what our history tells us. So, hopefully, we would think that between then and now, there has been some type of, advancement, progression. Is that a good word to use? Advancement, progression to, you know, to see what... as far as our racial harmony in the United States is about, but not just the United States, how about the world? You know, I guess I kind of pigeonholed it when I said the United States. What about the world? You know, how's the race relationships in the world? You know, are we getting along like we supposed to? Or are we getting along like we can? No, are we? You know, we are talking about race relationships, you know. So that means, it doesn't mean whether you're black, you're white, you're Chinese, I mean Asian, Latino, Hispanic, no, whatever. It all pertains to everyone when you say racial harmony. It does. Now, we know it's been documented about the struggle that our ancestors faced, you know, when they first came to the country, came to this place, you know, and let's be honest, some of them didn't come on their own good, some of them were brought over, okay? Now, yes, they faced struggles in helping form this supposedly great nation of ours. Yes, they did, but we all know back then there was no racial harmony. Well, no, we're not going to say there was no racial harmony, but there was racial harmony in a divided sense of the word. Let's put it that way. I know y'all. Some of y'all are like, what the heck is he talking about? Easy, because think about it. Back in the slavery days, the blacks hung with the blacks and the whites hung with the whites. So there was some sense of racial harmony. It just wasn't a general harmony altogether. That's right. No, but there was harmony among the races, among themselves. Am I right? Think about it. Give it some thought for a moment. Give it some thought. You know, so now we're talking from the peculiar institution of slavery. From slavery, now we're going to move all the way up to the civil rights, the Civil Acts Movement of the 1960s. No, so suppose then we begin the fight for what was supposed to be racial harmony, racial equality. Equality altogether. And here's the thing. Why does it just have to be based on race? Why can't we just say, as a people, we need to come together? Or yet, are we still in that frame of mind to where we have to pigeonhole it to start with race? We're not looking at it as a human type of thing. We have to look at it as separate and as in the races. No, we have to be specific about the type of harmony that we want to achieve. You know, then you had the institution of laws like affirmative action. Now, affirmative action, it was a good thing, but did that create racial harmony or did it create equality? Or did it fail at both? Yes, it helped some of us get in school and get in jobs. That's fine. But did that make us equal? Did that make us equal? Did that bring harmony among us with other races out there? Did it? You know, we sometimes we get stuck in labels and things of that nature. Now, we say racial harmony. In the U.S., does it really exist? And like I say, maybe it was my fault for the way I worded it, because, you know, it's kind of put in a tunnel when you just say, in the U.S., does it really exist? How about the world? Does it even exist in the world? Does it even exist in your household, your neighborhood, on your job? So, instead of just broadening it like that, we can break it down into the different levels that we really need to take a look at. Now, I know some of you are sitting there with your eyes wide open and I say, oh, boy, here we go. No, I mean, I'm not trying to start anything, but my intent today is to get you to open your eyes and see what's going on around you. Because a lot of you walking around right now with your eyes closed. You have no idea what's going on around you. You think everything is peachy keen. So if that's the case, I want you to talk to me today. Talk to me. No, African Americans, Hispanics, and Asian Americans, you know, are just some of the minorities that have had to fight for their rights as Americans in their communities and nationwide. So it's just not. National, even in your own community, sometimes you have to fight for your right to be an American, to have the right to walk down your street without being bothered or harassed. You know, why is that? This country has been around for a while now. A while. But yet we still do not have what should be depicted as racial harmony, or we don't have that togetherness. Now, you know what? And is there such a thing as perfect harmony as far as the races? Is there such a thing? Can that be achieved? Can it be achieved? I don't know. Maybe it can be achieved if we change the way we think, the way we do things. But when is that going to happen? When is that going to happen? You know, I understand in recent years people of color have made strides, you know, in all facets of American society. You know, some, you know, have been doing good in politics, films, movies, music, and of course, athletics. You know, we even have some authors now, you know, with best-selling books, novels. you know, judicial system. But yet, although we're making all these great achievements, does that still say, is that saying that we have racial harmony, or we just are advancing or improving? Does that even make us equal? Does that make us equal? It is safe to say that the America of yesterday, you know, is beginning the change into the pluralistic society in which minority groups face fewer limits than ever before in accomplishing their dreams, which is true to a certain extent. Of course, that's my opinion now. That's my opinion. But yes, you know, I would admit that yes, you know, there are on the surface. Now, see, let's get into this thing. Okay, and let's get into this thing. On the surface, yes. It does seem like there are fewer limits than ever when we're trying to accomplish our dreams, trying to reach that goal that we set for our life, or we reach that so-called American dream. You know, that house, that 2.5-member family, you know, little dog, white picket fence. I can't even say that is the new, that is not even the American dream now. Hey, you're lucky if you just get the house in today's society. But what I'm saying is, even though on the outside it looks like we're facing fewer limits, is that really the truth? Is that really the truth? Or are we facing underlying obstacles that we just either we're not aware of, or we just have turned a blind eye to? What do you think about that? Talk to me. We talking about racial harmony in the U.S. So what are we talking about? Does it exist? Does it really exist? Is there a way for it to exist? Yeah, we say there's more opportunity for the minorities. You know, there's more opportunity for everyone. And now even in today's society, when we have so many biracial couples, does that say that racial harmony is getting better? Or is that just making things worse? What do y'all think out there? I'm really curious to hear some comments on what do you think is going on. What do you think? You know, now moving to the present, you know, where the American dream is supposed to be, you know, available to everybody. Of course, you know, growing up, that's all you was hearing, you know, that American dream. So, with the American dream, do you think there's equality or harmony, racial harmony, when that everyone has the ability to reach that American dream? Or is it still to the point where someone has to work harder than someone else to get there? Which is, you know what, though? But if you have to work a little harder, that's fine. Because that comes with getting what you want. But how about when you're trying to move into a neighborhood that's predominantly another race, a creed, a color? Do you face barriers in trying to get into that neighborhood? Although on the outside it looks like everything is cool. You know, you're doing the paperwork, but every time you go to finalize on your house or close on your house, there's always another obstacle thrown in your way. Is that what happens to the point where you get frustrated enough to you say, oh, well, enough of this? You know, what is it about racial harmony that makes it seems like it's so perfect? that is supposed to be perfect. Huh? We all know for sure that there is a problem somewhere. Now, whether it's on top where you can see it, or it's under the table, or you know, underlying problem, it's still there. It really is. It's there. You know, and here's the sad part. Now it's 2012. Okay? Now, we done moved all the way from slavery to the civil rights movement of the 1960s, the invention of affirmative action. Now we're in the year 2012. We have an African American president. And, you know, with his election, some said that this election would issue in a new era in our country's race relations. That's what was said. That's what everybody believed. It really did. That's what everyone believed. You know, this country has finally got to the point to where it feels comfortable enough to elect an African-American president or a minority person to be president. Now, here's the rub. That's what it looks like on the outside. Am I right? That's what it looks like on the outside. But underneath, although it looks good to everybody that's not involved, we all know underlying that there is an issue, a serious issue in this country. And, it used to be out in the public where everybody could see. It did. No, but as time progressed, it became, you know, a little bit more subtle, you know, then it kind of got, you know, kind of hit a little bit. But in my opinion, within the last 2-3 years, it's no hiding no more. There is a racial division within this country. There is. And, you know, the other bad part about it is a lot of us minorities, we have problems with each other. This is going to put it out there. We don't even have racial harmony among ourselves. So how are we going to have it with someone else? Have it as a nation? So here's the question. Has it changed for the better or the worse? Has it? You know, but that's something people don't want to talk about. Why not? Only time you want to talk about it when a group of people get together and they destroy something. Or something real bad happens and it can be attributed to one group of people, one group of citizens. Heck, right now in our country, we got this big thing about illegal immigration. But some of them folk have been here for years and have worked beside you on a daily basis. But you don't want to hear that either, do you? Your mind is made up. You don't like them. You ain't going to try and like them. And whatever you do, you're going to try to do everything to get them out the country. And same for the other person sitting right next to you. If they're not the color of your skin, you don't want nothing to do with them, nothing. You barely talk to them at work. I'm just going to put it out there. You know, some of the same ones that keep crying out, you know, we don't have any racial harmony, we don't have this, you some of the main culprits that are doing the wrong thing. You are some of the main culprits that's keeping us from reaching that plateau of racial harmony. Let's keep, as the young folks say, let's keep it real. Let's keep it real. We have an election coming up, and it's a shame at the division that's going on. I mean, it is really something terrible. You know, now, Mitt Romney has a 20-point advantage among white voters. Among white voters now. Between him and President Obama, when it comes to the white voters, Mitt Romney has a 20-point advantage. 20-point. Now, President Obama is supported by 91% of black voters and 57% of other minority voters. Do you see where it's broke? That you can't get it any plainer than that. You can't. You see it every day on TV while these politicians getting up there running for the Senate, running for whatever. First thing they say is, we're going to appeal Obamacare. No, we're going to appeal this. We're not trying, they're not trying to put a form out there. They're just trying to go ahead and do what they're going to do. They're not trying to hide it. No, there is no harmony. But can there be harmony? Yes. Yes, I'm sure there can be. The chat room says they have also been paying taxes if they are not getting paid under the table. Yeah. You know, in the day of age 2012, the so-called 21st millennium or whatever, the millennium or whatever it's called, we still have this issue going on with our race. And we're supposed to be the most advanced and free and straightforward country there is. But yet we can't even get our people together to come together as one. Oh, we do fine, so-called fine once you know, a war happens or something like that. That's fine. And don't just think it's done in the civilian side of the house. The same thing is happening in the military side, too. It's just a little bit more covered up, but the same thing is happening. So my question is, when are we going to be able to fix this thing? Are we going to be able to fix it? Are we? Because it needs to be done, but how are we going to do it? How are we? I mean, somebody talk to me here. It's like I'm talking to myself. Talk to me. I want to know what you think about it. I really do. Racial harmony in the U.S., does it really exist? No. In my opinion, no, it doesn't. If somebody got something different, tell me about it, because I want to know. As I mentioned before, you know, yes, there's more opportunity out there for each individual. There's a lot more things going on. The so-called help the minority reach their own, accomplish their dreams. But really, is that creating harmony? Is it? No, it's not creating any harmony because there is none there. We can't even get along with each other. And we can't. We cannot get along with each other. So if we can't get along with each other, we definitely can't get along with anybody else. You know, some of us, with numbers of biracial couples that we have walking around here now, do you realize that we have more, what's the word am I looking for? We have more of us objecting to biracial couples than anything else. Why? Why? You should be welcoming that to where they are breaking down those barriers to where we can achieve that racial harmony. But some of you, as soon as you see it, your nose go up, you get to talking crazy. Why? Are you that closed-minded to where you just not going to tolerate anything being changed? Are you? I mean, there's you know, the numbers say it out. 91% for President Obama and Romney has a 20-point advantage with white voters. Yeah. So what does that say? We are a divided nation. We are. You want further examples? Take a look at the struggle that goes on every day in Washington between the White House and the Senate and Congress. You know? Tell me. I mean, so how can we get better if they can't get along there and they're making all the rules? Huh? I mean, what's going on with that? Are we gonna get to a point to where we have racial harmony in this country? Are we going to even get to the point to where we have racial harmony among each other? Let's go on to put it out there. You know what? And Tony brought up a good thing. You know, we talking about racial harmony. Even the place where the president stay has a color, the White House. Oh, look out now. Look out now. The White House. I mean, that's a good point. You never see those are just the little things nobody sit back and think about. The White House. Why couldn't it just be called the President's Mansion? Or you know what I mean? England, London has what? The Buckingham Palace? There's no color on that. But we got the White House. Maybe because we just had white presidents up until now. You know what I'm saying? You know, maybe that's what it is. But besides that, okay, we give them that. Because, you know, that's not going to change regardless of what we do. Probably not in our lifetime anyway. We can try, but I doubt it's going to happen. But here's my point I'm trying to make. Everybody keeps saying, well, our racial, you know, it's getting better. It's getting better. It's getting better. Well, show me where it's getting better at. Where's our really race relations getting better at? Tony say, now don't make us change the name to something we can relate to. Yeah, Tony, I hear you. I hear you. We have supposedly our state representatives, up there in Congress, in the Senate, and they are battling their butt off against the president. Why? Why? You know, if anything, this was the time now to come together and work together. But, you know, it's causing more of a drift, a drift apart than it is bringing us together. It is. You know, what is the American dream now? What is the American dream now? Nobody knows, because there is no American dream. The reason why it isn't is because every generation has backwoods. Has backwards and inner city oppression, and the stupidity of the thoughts are in the upbringing. Interesting. But you're right. You're right. But you know what? They don't want to agree with the president because it makes it too easy to be transparent. They have to uphold the right and the left wing. Once again, there we go. If you notice, the right and the left wing, the Republicans and the Democrats, the Tea Party, everything has a designation. Nothing is together. Right? Think about it. Either you're a Republican or you're a Democrat. Either you're a liberal or you're a conservative. Tony says, the American dream is to remain criminal-free and debt-free to an extent. Well, Tony, that's nice and dandy, but who's achieving that? Who's achieving that? Besides Oprah, and Tyler Perry and a few others. Who else is achieving that? I mean, who else is? You know, Jennifer Lopez, maybe. And we know how she's achieving hers. Everything else is irrelevant. Look at the mortgage crisis. That was the dream to own a home and make $1,000K per year. And that was busted shady banking in which the government runs. Now, that's what Tony's. That's the conversation that's going on in our chat room right now. But, Tony, even if that's the case, Tony, why can't we get it together? Now, why can't we? Now, don't make me call in. I mean, you know, and you know, we say the mortgage crisis and this and that and other, but who was there to give us the guidance, the financial guidance on that? Were we trying to help each other, or were we just trying to make that money? I'm trying to sell that house, trying to make that commission. Did you go out and see, I mean, because some of y'all moved in these big-time neighborhoods, you know what I'm talking about, where, you know, you have a association and you're the only one on the block. So did you think about trying to see what your neighbors were paying for theirs and what their interest rates were? I bet you didn't. So you down there struggling getting your house mortgage foreclosed on, and they still living comfortably. Why do you think that happened? Because everyone is worried about being passed in status. Keep the lower and middle class down because a title is the importance in current life. You know what, Tony? You have a good point. But you know what, Tony? Here's the thing about that. The way things are going right now, there's not going to be a middle class pretty soon. It's just going to be us and them. And it's headed that way. I mean, it's headed that way. You know, I mean, that's all it's going to be, us and them. So how can we reverse this trend that we're headed in? Because now we're supposed to be living in an age where everything's supposed to be getting better, but it's worse. It's not getting worse. Now, see, because someone said, well, it's all right, but it's getting worse. No, it's not getting worse. It is worse. It is bad now. And you know what? Honestly, it never went anywhere. It really didn't. The same things that we see now on a daily basis was going on all the time. It was. It was going on a daily basis. We just failed to look at it and see it. It's like Ralphie may say, the only people that didn't want to be here is blacks, and they were tricked into a free cruise. Okay, buddy. Oh, Lord have mercy. Lord. We keep yelling about we want racial harmony. We want this and we want that. Yet in this country's history, has there been anything such as racial harmony? This is going to put it out there. I agree. It's just in our face now because it affects us. You're right. You're right. Long as we had somebody else, you know, in the White House, it was kept undercover. The good old boy network was, you know, undercover. They was doing their dirt. It faced surface every now and then to go back in. Now, it's no more hiding. This is going to put out. There's no more hiding. It's in full effect. It is. It's in full effect. And you know the bad part about it? As I mentioned before, it's just not them against us. It's us against us. That's right. It's us against us. And that is worse than them against us. Because as long as we fighting among each other and trying to keep each other holding back or trying to outstatus the next one, then guess what, y'all? We never going to get anything done right. We're not. Let me take me a call right here. Hello, caller. Thank you for calling. Let's talk. What's on your mind?
Hey. What's up, man? It's Tony.
Hey, what's going on, Tony?
Nothing much, man. You got a good conversation going.
Hey, go ahead, man. Go on and get your piece of this.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm listening in, and you got a lot of points, you know, and it's kind of sad that, you know, nobody actually realized this is going on before now, because now it's affecting people that it shouldn't affect. You know, nothing's going to be brought to light unless you're powerful enough to bring it to light. I could say everything that I want to say, do whatever I want to do, but I'm a little man. You know, you get somebody who's big with you out here complaining, then everybody want to listen all of a sudden.
That is true. But you know what, Tony? I mean, we can always blame, say, the big people up top. Well, and in some instances, we have to look within our own communities and neighborhoods, though.
I agree, and I think that's part of the problem. You know, is everybody's looking to blame somebody else instead of taking accountability for themselves. You know, I mean, I commend you with what you do on your radio show. You know, we all trying to do something. But at the same time, we got to be responsible for what we put out. You know, if you're putting out a bad product, ain't nobody going to buy it. You know, that goes all the way around.
Correct. You're right. You are absolutely right. You know, and, you know, when doing a little research, I'm looking at these numbers, man, and it was just almost discouraging.
It is. It really is. You know, I mean, it comes to a point, bro, that really it gets to a point that you question yourself, like, what do I have to shoot for? You know, you gotta restructure that American dream that you were just talking about. You know, American dream to you is a different American dream to me. That's, again, perception.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might think an American dream is a Cadillac Escalade in a one-bedroom studio apartment. You might think it's a Cadillac Escalade in a 10-bedroom house. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but see, here's the catch to that. As soon as you tell somebody your dream, though, and instead of them trying to help you get to there, you know, they're trying to tear you down. And
exactly.
It's not from the outside, though.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Usually you're in a circle. You know, nobody wants to see anybody else advance in life, you know. It's a lot, you know, I watch a lot of comedy. You know, Steve Harvey said it himself. You know, he's on his comedy show talking about, just because I'm doing good don't mean you need to be doing good. Quit calling me. You know what I'm saying? You got to do better for yourself before you can actually get people to do better for you, you know, that's going to back you up. Yeah, I'm a firm believer that if I'm doing good, you know, like what I'm trying to do, you know what I'm trying to do, and I have so many people backing me up doing that, I believe in paying it forward. Everybody else is believing and clawing their way to the top and forgetting about the people that helped them get there.
That is so true. But you know, my point is, if that is the case, then how are we going to keep screaming that we need to be equal when we're not even equal among ourselves? Or we're not, you know what I'm saying, respectful of ourselves, our own race?
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, it's one of those things that you can't. I had this conversation with my wife earlier today. You know, you can't expect other people to look at you one way when you don't look at yourself that way. You know, and I'm not the smartest man in the world, but I try to use my brain as much as possible. You know,
mm-hmm.
And if you think about yourself one way and you're putting yourself down, you think about yourself, you know, you out there doing your hustle and your grind and that's what you're worth, then that's what other people are going to see you as. You know, you can't get mad when somebody call you outside of your name or call you something that you're at least you're closely related to, because it's what you perceive and what you're showing everybody else you are. You know, ain't nothing you can do about that.
You're right. Now, let me show y'all just how quickly things change in this country. In December 2011, there was a poll done where 60% of Americans felt that society in this country was fair and decent. All right? Now, 20% disagreed and felt that the society was unfair and discriminatory. And 12% was unsure. Now, another poll taken just a month later, January 2012, showed 33% of Americans believed race relations were getting better, And 32% say it is getting worse. And 29% say it's about the same.
Hmm.
You know, so we talk about a month apart. A month apart. And all of a sudden we got such a big change. There's something that's not right there. No, it's not right.
Now, did they poll the same exact people, or did they poll different people in different areas?
They polled different people, but here's my thing, my point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why should it come up different? It should. If in that case, if everything was okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
It came out favorably both times.
Mm-hmm.
See, but. You know, sometimes I know we discuss polls and we know that they're, you know, what they're meant to do, and sometimes they can be manipulated. But the point is still, we still have a problem that no one wants to talk about. Now, you hear all the other polls about, you know, the president's lead or Mitt Romney's lead or so forth and so on, but you won't hear anything about a poll like this. Why? Are we so scared now of the race issue in this country or even in our own neighborhood that it's just become taboo to talk about?
I think we are. You know, I mean, that's my personal opinion. You know, I just watch, I try to watch society. I'm huge on current events, CNN, and all the good stuff. I'm sure just like you are. But if you really look at it, race is very sensitive to anybody. You know, and I don't know why it is as sensitive with all the hurdles that we've all, you know, crossed to get where we are today. It should be something that we should be able to freely and openly talk about with nobody getting but hurt. You know, it's sad. You know, it's really sad that you can't talk about race, you can't talk about color, you can't talk about anything without somebody trying to censor it, you know, make fool of it, make mockery of it. You know, and I think that's kind of, you know, jumping to a different tangent. That's kind of, you know, where these rappers are coming from, these artists are coming from, that can use their artistic mind and their money and their influence to say things that they want to say and be heard, because they're the ones that really need to be running for the government. I mean, they're the one with the voice. I mean, if you really look at it, if I was running for office, I'm going to go find me a rapper, and I'm going to tell them to rap about it. I'm serious. I mean, real talk, think about it. Those are the ones that's getting all the airplay. They get all the attention. They're the ones in the news. They're all over the place. You know, we don't know about what presidential candidates we got running here and there, but we know about somebody getting out of jail. I mean, come on.
Hey, okay. All right. I'm with you now. Go ahead.
You know, I mean, I'm one that if I got something, you know, on my head or whatever, I'm going to speak on it. And I understand that people don't agree with me, and that's just what makes us individuals. But I see it from a totally different box. You know, I'm not going to see it exactly straightforward for what it is. I'm going to see it totally different than everybody else is, because I don't look at it. My wife tells me all the time, you always walk around the box before you go inside. Yeah, because I want to make sure there ain't no booby traps set up. I want to know what I'm getting myself into. You know what I'm saying? So if they thought about it, you know, I think Obama was kind of smart having Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie at the White House. But the thing is about it is they aren't able to speak their mind freely unless they're on film.
Now, see? So, you know what, and then maybe that's another issue we have. We have gotten to the point, as you mentioned before, to where you just can't speak your mind. We're too politically correct.
There you go.
Careful what you say and how you say it and when you say it, and that's part of the issue there.
Exactly.
Nobody wants to speak their mind. You know, exactly. But speaking of rappers, I remember back in the day with NWA, you know, Kool Moe Dee, all those guys. You know, they like you said, when they spoke, you listened, because mm-hmm. they had been talking about something.
Exactly.
You know, that came to everyday life. I mean, yeah, you know, rappers today, they doing their thing, but it's not the same. You know, if anything, they're, to me, in my opinion, they're creating a bigger gap because of the way they're trying to tell the story.
I agree with that because not everybody can relate to that message. You know, it's a demographic message. If you have a rapper saying one thing you have a country artist saying another thing, you have a rock and roll singer saying another thing, it's going to hit three different sides of the spectrum, and everybody's going to get a different interpretation. I mean, I don't know very many rap songs that turned into country songs and vice versa. Everybody's going to say it differently, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, the rapper might come out and throw a couple of explicitives and say his point and everybody understands it, but that's in a different neighborhood. You know,
right.
You actually saying it, oh, yeah, my dog died, I got hit by a car, and, yeah, vote for this person. just saying. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But see, and you know what? That's funny because I had a train of thought here. I almost lost it there. You know, and most of the rappers these days, they saying one thing, but they live in a whole different lifestyle.
Bingo.
You know what I'm saying? But they're not, and here's the catch. They're not portraying that lifestyle, though.
Exactly.
In their music.
I agree.
You know, you take Ice Cube, Ice-T,
Kool-Aid,
all them, you know, even though they were doing their thing, eventually you knew they had families. You know what I'm saying? You knew the type of, you know, what they had.
Yep. I mean, I was actually, the other day, I was hitting Snoop up on Twitter. You know, I had him looking into my organization and stuff like that. But, you know, I actually look up to him. You know, he is a very stand-up father. You know, but when you look at what he does as far as his artist, you know, his artistry, he says it and he puts it out there. You know, this is who I am as an artist, and this is who I am as a father. And it's amazing to see that transition, but he knows how to switch it off. You know what I mean?
Right. But, so let's get back to talking about what the topic is, though. So, I mean, so how can we use them to bridge this gap of equality, racial harmony, though? Or can we do that?
You know, they Americans or otherwise, but they're humans just like we are. You know, and I think that it's not their job as artists to do it, but I do believe they have the most influence. And if they say something, it's like I said, it's heard. You know, if you go on CNN and you watch it, you think it automatically is mixed up and construed. But if you listen to it in a song, you know, especially trying to reach the people that need to be reached for this to actually change, which is the next generation. Our generation is a little bit too late, but we still got a little bit of morals.
Mm-hmm.
Still have, and that's what I was saying about the backwoods thing. That wasn't a pun on Southerners or anything like that. That was true. Because in order for racism to continue and simple-mindedness to continue, somebody's got to be breeding and teaching it. These kids don't come out knowing this stuff.
Hmm.
So somebody actually still has that thought process and that frame of mind in the back of their head, and it's poison to society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in order for it to stop, somebody's going to actually have to start that process.
Now you see, you done said a mouthful there. You done said a mouthful there. You know, and I sometimes, huh?
I'm saying, you know.
A lot of times I use that same analogy. You know, I'm like, if you put a bunch of kids in the room together and just put them in there, don't tell them nothing about any of them, the kids will get along fine. They don't see any color. You know, they don't see anything, but you're another kid and I want to play. And that's what we're going to do.
Exactly.
You know, it's when as they get older and we as parents or the world, you know, starts putting things in their little fresh heads, you know, that causes to say and believe something that they really don't know anything about, to be honest with you.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's a topic within itself. I mean, not even knowing where this comes from, because if you really look at the statistics, you know, and what happened recently, you know, in the movie theaters and all the other stuff, you know, you try to look at that and then you try to go back to the demographics of how that person was raised. Most of these people had it made as kids. You know, no broken homes. You know, no domestic violence cases, none of this issues, and all of a sudden something snaps. You know, so where is their influence?
Yeah. Well, that's a good point, too. But you know, you're looking at it, you got to look at it like, okay, if that's the case, then they've got it made. So how did they get to this point? You know what I mean?
That's generally the Twilight Zone.
I mean, because what I want to say is, you think about, as I mentioned before, slavery, you know, Civil Rights Act, affirmative action. Now we're in 2012 and we have an African-American president, but yet we still, here we are still talking about racism. You know, a racial divide in our country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and only time we halfway come together is if something happens to our so-called country. But during normal times, we are quick to be told that this is really not our country in some circles.
I agree. You know, you and I, Eric, we both traveled the world. I know you probably went to Germany and all those other places. Now, me going to Germany on a civilian side of it and working with the DOD, it was one of those things that I had to ask myself, is it a reason because it's taboo to those places that just don't know about, you know, Americans or about African Americans or white Americans or whatever American? Is it just taboo, and is that the cause for the separation and divide in society?
Well, you know what? I think it goes all the way back to history and tradition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a long time, only thing the rest of the world knew about us as African Americans were what they were told. You know, because we weren't allowed to go to Germany or places like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, only thing they heard was what they were told.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as we got over there, they started seeing a different side, but it was still confusing to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, that's why it was kind of taboo, because they didn't have the understanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they were led to believe one thing when they, you know, that we were, I guess, inferior compared to the white soldiers or what have you.
Yeah.
Now we got our foot in the door, and it's kind of changing a little bit, but there's still a little bit there, just like in this country. It's less, what's so funny, though? It's less racism toward us overseas than it is in our own country.
Believe it or not, that's 100% truth.
It really is.
I mean, I went over to Germany, man, when I was 16. And I was doing some work out there. I opened up a company and went out there. And it seemed like when I got off the plane, you know, like I told people when I came back, you know, America's free with our freedoms and liberties and so on and so forth. But I have never seen a country as free as Germany. You know, they actually have freedoms that we don't have here. And it's just the way the society is made. I mean, that can go as far as the not exploitation, but as far as the way they are with their sexuality, even. You know, mm-hmm. Every commercial is 09100, call this number now for fun, you know. I mean,
right.
You do that over here, and every channel's going to be off the air. You know? So it's kind of, it's just weird. It's a weird feeling, you know, to go over there and see all this stuff and see how open and free and open-minded and open, you know, outspoken people are, you know, for you to come back and actually have the censors that we do.
Hmm. Okay, here's another question for you, Jay. Here's another question for you, Tony.
All right.
If that is the case, so basically what is it going to take for a whole generation to die out before we actually get better? Is that basically what we're saying?
No, because we still have the breeding of the nonsense in the background.
Mm.
You know, we still have the teaching of the nonsense and the hatred and the ignorance, you know, lack of better words, the ignorance. You know, I mean, like one of my best friends, you know, once upon a time, he was a diehard racist. You know, he's like my best friend. He would die for me, you know, and he, reason why is because something back in his history of upbringing, him and his friends were jumped by a bunch of African-American males. And the girl that they were with was raped. So that put this in the back of his head that all persons of color had this thing about them. You know what I'm saying? Without putting my finger on it, had this thing about them. Mm-hmm. So when he actually met me and he seen me and he's like, well, you know what? You know, you are different. You know, it kind of struck his interest as to, okay, why is this guy different than everybody else that I thought? You know, it's up to us to change the way people look at us. You know, it's not for us. It doesn't really matter how people look at me. It just is what it is. That's your vision, not mine. But at the same time, we got to hold ourselves to a different standard than what others have in the past or what you think, you know, we stand for before society will actually catch on. That's what I believe.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And like you said, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, you know, how you think. As long as you carry yourself hold yourself to a certain standard, you will be, you know, find out that you are different. Let's see, going to the chat room, Jay said that would never happen. I thought that 40 years ago. Just wait and the racists will die off.
See?
I mean, that is a point, but like Tony just said, even though if the racists die off, what are we going to do with the young ones that's being taught to be racist? That's going to grow up to be racist then?
Yeah,
or hope that some kind of way someone will reach them and change their mind.
You know, we all had those hopes, you know, and I'm a huge history buff. I mean, we all had those hopes back in 42 and World War II and Hitler being, you know, assassinating himself. That was smart. But, you know, we had all these hopes about things changing and racism just dying off. But here we are 70 years down the line and ain't nothing changed.
And nothing changed, huh?
You know, I mean, I'm just saying it's a hope. It's a good wish. We had a good start, you know, with the changes in the United States as far as first African-American president, but that ain't going to change the mind of society because there's so many people against it. Still, even though it happened, there's so many people against it that ignorance just won't go away. It's not going to phase out.
You know, and I'm thinking, you know, thinking back to the history, as you say, we had some of our own people back in the day didn't want us here. Marcus Garvey, for one. You know, he was talking about going back to Africa and starting a thing there, a nation there.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe it's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of inbreeding, but for lack of a better word, you know, maybe it's a little bit of inbreeding on our own part, too. And you still have some older African Americans that still hold grudges against older Caucasians.
I agree.
Let's not put it out there. Because I know some of them that they have no use for them at all.
Yep, I agree. You know, so it ain't a white thing. It ain't a black thing. It's just, you know, society needs to really snap out of it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of more of a mental thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's more to... You know, okay, this is the way it used to be in my day. I know we're supposed to be getting better, but I'm not changing the way I think.
Yep. And the number one thing that everybody is scared of is change. You know, I do sales, you know, on my day job. And I tell them, you know what, don't be afraid to change nothing if it's going to improve what you got. You know, sometimes you got to make that change. You got to get rid of the bad before you can have the good. You got to go through hell before you get to heaven. So, I mean, what's the point in you sticking with something that's just enough when you can do so much better?
I couldn't say it better myself. Wow.
I mean, and knowledge is empowering, man. I mean, if you really look at it, I get these infamous assassination shows on my DVR, on my TiVo, and I watch them. And the other day I watched the Martin Luther King, I watched the Hitler, I watched the Malcolm X. You know, Malcolm X was killed by his own people. I mean, people don't really think about that. It might have been a conspiracy theory, but he was killed by his own people.
Own people. The same ones he broke bread with, that he walked around with on a daily basis.
And you know why? Because knowledge is power.
Yeah.
He was getting too strong for him, and they didn't want him to outlast the society.
Well, you know, plus Malcolm was talking about change anyway.
Yep.
He's one of the ones that actually took the trip to Mecca and realized You know, all these different people are coming together. You know, there's no difference between all us. We all going, in this case, we all going toward the summit to, you know, do our worship.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, he opened his eyes, so why can't I come back here when I call home, you know, and get the same thing going? But, of course, we have the ones with the closed mind, you know, don't want change, not trying to get change, and what they do, they kill it off. If they can, that's what they do, and that's what they did. They thought they did then.
You know, and to not make light of it, but think about it straight for what it is. There is no white heaven. There ain't no black heaven. There ain't no white hell. There ain't no black hell. We all going to hell. Or we all going to heaven. So we might as well get along while we in flesh.
See? Oh, mercy. See, now, see, you just stole the ending to my show. See,
I'm sorry, bro. You can use it again. Play back and rewind. Because I'm just saying, you know, it don't matter when it all comes down to it. We all going to be standing in front of the same man on Judgment Day, and neither one of us going to have a word to say because we're going to lose our voice. But you know what? Let's just do it while we're here, and not to pacify each other, but let's just do it while we're here, man. It's a smarter thing to do.
You're right. But, you know, like we've been saying, though, we still have those that don't understand that. But we keep, but just like everything else, we keep yelling about racial harmony. You know, the races, you know, we're going to have this and we're going to have that. But, you know, when? When are we going to even put it, put up a legitimate attempt to get to that point?
Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, And there ain't no telling. And everybody can say, oh, time will tell. Time has been trying to tell for many, many years. You know, time doesn't change nothing. We got to change it. You know, I mean, it's weird, man. It's frustrating, but it's definitely weird.
Going in the chat room says, with that said, we all bleed the same blood and breathe the same air. Okay.
Amen,
that is true. Of course, some try to keep us from doing that, but
oh, for real.
I'm just sitting here thinking, Tony. Though, but is it? Let's look at it this way, or is it destined for us not to be on this point? And this is why I'm saying, if you go back to the biblical days, you know, you had the slaves coming out of Egypt. You know, even when that was going on, they never were, not going to say, accepted as being equal. They fought among themselves, too. So is going back that far, is it just predestined that it just be this way?
Well, I think that I don't think that there's any point in time where there'll be a unified 100% front. I think that it's always going to be a split in society. Unfortunately, it's true. I think that there's always going to be people out there that want to battle the wits, such as, you know, the conversation we're having, which is a damn good conversation. But it's going to be like this forever and ever. I don't think that we could change it. I don't think even if we're dead and gone, you know, our kids are still going to be battling the same thing that we're talking about today. You know, and that's just because we all know history does repeat itself. But at the same time, stupidity does too.
Hmm.
You know, and sometimes stupidity outweighs history. And if we want to think, you know, with an ignorant mind or a blind eye, then that's just what it is. Because we can't change this as a society, because society's not built to be changed like that. I don't think so. That's why and you know what? We're learning from the best of them. You know, if we really look at turn on your TV and look at these presidential things. You know, let's go back to that real quick. You know, there ain't nobody talking about nothing common. Everybody want to throw mud at the next person. Everybody want to fight and this and that, whatever.
Right.
You know, we're used to these fights. We're used to these battles. We're used to these bickering matches. Ain't nobody going to get away with nothing easy.
Easy.
You know, it is what it is, man. I mean, you're going to fight to the day you die, and that's just what we're here for. We're here to fight every day for our bills, our jobs, our relationships, our kids. It don't matter. you're always going to fight. And that's just because if they're fighting up there over over words on a piece of paper, what makes you think we're going to not fight out here trying to live it?
Okay. So with that being said, so, okay. So if with that being said, we know we talking about equality. If we even going to get any equality going? Well, wait a minute before you go there. I got a caller. Let's see what the caller got to say. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Thank you for joining. Let's talk. What's on your mind?
Hey, how y'all doing? This is Ray calling from Baltimore.
Hey, Ray. What's going on, man? We doing good.
Oh, man. I mean, I think that they're really generally with the system that you currently have, which is basically a system that pits one community against another to fight over, you know, I won't even call it scarce resources because it's not really scarce resources, really, because really collectively we're all too damn greedy. But to fight over whatever resources that are there, you know, you're always going to have that division, you know, between those two communities. Because, I mean, it's, you know, the best description I ever got of capitalism when I was in school, a professor once told me, it's basically two guys in a small hole with a sharp stick. And he was like, that's basically it. I mean, it's dog eat dog. I mean, you got 20 people around the table and only 10 slices of pizza. Somebody's not going to eat. And how you build unity in that situation, I mean, you just can't. You just can't. And so basically what you have now is you have a political system that's basically used to keep us from killing each other. That's basically what these elections are all about because, you know, really poor white people don't know a thing about Mitt Romney, but they're going to vote for him. Poor black people don't know a damn thing about Barack Obama, but they're going to vote for him. And what those votes are, those votes are a substitution for punches and gunshots. Because if you didn't have this system of politics for us to air out, you know, our anger towards one another, you know, whether it's gay people or Hispanic people or whoever it is you don't like, you just vote because you think the person you're voting for will say something negative about the group you don't like or agrees with you about your negative view about the people you don't like. Not that he's going to do anything to them when he gets in, mind you. You just vote for somebody who agrees with you. But basically, voting is just about voting for somebody you identify with. And that process of voting just takes the place of war, because if you didn't have politics in this country, which you probably have, as you probably have, you know, recurring civil wars, or you have, like, you know, you have, like, little sporadic tribal disputes going on, people fighting for this piece of territory, basically gang warfare, you know. But, I mean, so that's what it is. It's a system of control, and it's nothing but that. And I don't say that to say it's not necessary, because really a choice between having a couple of dummies go to the voting booth and pull the lever as opposed to having people shooting up the streets between one another because they don't like the way each other look, I'd rather go with the politics. But I recognize it for what it is, and I don't spend really that much time kind of following it and, you know, day by day and this and that or whatever. I did it one time, but I just got to a point. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any difference. We're just being controlled by it. It doesn't really matter who gets in. Nobody really seems to really do anything to really shake anything up in any kind of real way, regardless of what they say and what they're campaigning. And after they get in, the people who vote them in don't really hold them to account. So, I mean, it really, it's just a system of control. It's one more system of control. It really is the Matrix. It's
I got chat room open, and they just said voting replaces fighting. Come on. So I guess they want you to break it down a little bit more for them, because right now they're saying that really doesn't make any sense to them.
Well, because what I'm saying is you got all this anger amongst conservative white people, a lot of anger amongst conservative white people who think that basically – you know, a part of their paycheck is being stolen so some poor ghetto black person can buy a pair of Jordans and some chicken wings. This is what they really think. They really think that week after week, they're bringing home less money to buy tobacco and Miller Lite because your ass is wearing Jordans. This is what they think. They think their money is being taken out of their pocket. Now, if you actually looked at it, really, they're not making any less than they otherwise would have made, but this is what they think, all right? Black people don't really I'd be hesitant to say black people really are angry with white people. I really, my impression has always been black people are more or less afraid of white people.
Mm-hmm.
But the, you know, because whenever we have a riot, we never ever take our ass to Beverly Hills and burn that down. You know,
mm-hmm.
we get mad. The first thing we do is burn down the barbershop we go to every Saturday. But ask us to go two blocks up the street and burn down the white barbershop. You never see a black man burn down Supercuts. Put it like that.
Okay.
It never happened. It never happened.
No, I got another caller. Hold on. Hello, caller. You on air? Thank you for joining. Let's talk. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Eric. This is Jay. I'm listening to your caller, and I totally have to disagree. You know, politics are replaced going out killing someone. I don't know. Yeah, I don't have time to push Google that quick, but I would love to very quickly Google in the number of homicides that were committed in the United States of America this year. Okay, so that can't hold up at all. All right, and number one, if a person partakes in the system, the political system, if they're doing something about it, not just sitting home watching it on TV, they can make a change. I mean, just take the healthcare system that America has needed for years that just got passed by President, it was passed in 2011, but now it has been confirmed as being legal, you know, to the other side, you know, which is a little silly. But in the next 10 years, because people can't see it now, this system is going to save thousands of lives in America. You know, then you take the first thing President Obama did when he got into office, which was the Equal Rights Bill for wages for women. So politics does work if you work the system.
What I'm saying is
there's
politics.
Some popularity involved in voting. If you watch what's going on with Romney right now, even if it wasn't President Obama that was in office, I think I would still be voting for the other candidate just looking at the way that this guy is stumbling overseas and making a fool of himself. Okay? So to say that it's just a system to control people, no. No, too many people died, first of all, for us as blacks to get the opportunity to vote. I remember my father as a child sitting there crying because we were in a Republican town and he couldn't vote the way that he wanted to just to keep his job. Thank God we're not in a situation like that right now. So I'm sorry. I don't agree with what you call it at all.
Okay.
I mean, if you allow me to respond to that, really what you have in the Democratic Party is a party that, you know, slightly favors the poor. And with the Republican Party, a party that slightly favors the rich, but there's not enough of a gap between either one of them to really mean much to folks who are in the middle. Okay, so if you're not relying on social services or welfare checks, it doesn't really much matter to you. And if you're not a person who's going to be hit by the death tax, it doesn't really much matter to you. So all this stuff is on the edges. And what's going on with the people in the middle doesn't really get addressed. So, I mean, really, the two parties are basically irrelevant. They're not really accomplishing anything except fighting about policies that only affect people on the edges. The majority of us have jobs and have health care through those jobs. The majority of us are not going to have an estate big enough to get hit by a death tax. The majority of us don't have enough money to be worried about whether or not we're going to get hit with a capital gains tax. These things don't affect us, but, you know, take up probably 90% of the political discourse in this country. 90% of the fighting is about taxes that none of us will ever pay or social programs most of us don't currently enjoy, okay? So given that reality, my conclusion is that the entire process is an irrelevant system of control.
Well,
the majority of us don't fall into those extremely rich or extremely poor.
No, but you just gave your opinion. Okay,
that's not the opinion of all America.
You're saying that there's only the poor and there's only the wealthy and that there's no middle class.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the politics that we fight over generally tend to only be those that affect those who are very poor or very rich, and those in the middle and their concerns don't really get addressed. You know, they said that the health care bill is only going to help about 40 million people who who don't have insurance get insurance, okay? It's a country of 300 million people, okay? So we just spent the last 2 years fighting about a policy that doesn't even make up 20% of the country. It won't even impact 20% of the country. This
well,
is
see,
what
that's
we
where you're
do.
Wrong.
This
okay.
is what we do.
Let me explain, if I may. Well, just on the healthcare issue alone by itself. You remember I said earlier it would take probably 10 years for people to see it and really realize the full effect of it. Okay. You're familiar with the terminology of preventive medicine, right?
Yes.
Okay. A lot of people in America don't even get preventive medicine because, number one, a number of people can't even afford to go to the doctor. Okay, I happen to live in Germany. Okay, when I got out of the military, I decided to stay in Germany. All right, so my family is under what they're calling in the States the national system. But let me show you just a quick comparison. I was in the state for about 18 months in 07 to 08, back there on business, okay? And therefore, I had to go, you know, make some trips to the doctors. Okay, when I went to see a doctor back there, just to walk in the door, it was $75 before he did anything. That was his, I think y'all call it some kind of pay. I can't remember the terminology for it, but some kind of pay you got. Over here, if you're under the national systems, it's like $7, a quarter. A quarter.
Hmm.
Okay? All right? That you know, then we're talking about total coverage to include your dental system.
So what you're saying is.
And the other thing is this is what a lot of people don't realize. Okay, the people you're talking about that were not covered, okay, the people who were covered were paying for them also by the increased cost of health care. Once these people are no longer flooding the emergency rooms, you will see the cost of medicines and health care come down.
Well, this is what I'm not
it's
arguing about
sense.
The merits. It's not what I'm not arguing with the merits of the bill. What I'm trying to get across to you is that the entire fight was about a very slim segment of the pot. You have to admit that 40 million is a very slim segment of 300 million, my brother, because that's just a mathematical fact.
No, those are lives you're speaking of. I don't care if it was just 5 million. Those are lives.
Hell, I mean, those are lives.
But there's a lot of problems being suffered by the other, you know, 295 million that aren't being addressed when you're fighting over 2 years about the problems of 5 million. I mean,
yeah, but okay, I don't know how much you pay for health insurance. I was in
the
space. I sold
general,
health insurance for a little bit.
Okay,
I'm in the life insurance
welfare.
Industry. Health insurance was very costly in the United States of America. So I can understand why people are walking around without it. Okay? You're now in a situation
it's
where
not,
you don't have to do that anymore.
It's not
that 40 million does not have to be left out. I'm sorry, sir. If you were without it for the last 5 years, now you would be not saying what you're saying about it, those 30 million not being important, or 40 some million. It's actually going up to 56 million to be exact, not being important because they are.
Saying they are important. What I'm saying is the fights are always about these slim majorities. That's what it's always about. People always tell you it's the most important thing in the world, no matter what it is, and we move from one fight about this slim majority to another fight about this slim majority, you know, over and over and over and over again.
Okay, well, what about the women being paid equally to men? Was that not worth it, the fight?
They were already being paid equally as far as I know.
No, they weren't.
Was that a major problem?
It was not a major problem. Well, I wish some female were calling us listening to the show.
Yeah, I wish a female. Hey, ladies, if y'all out there, you dial in 347-838-8622. Let us know what's on your mind. Get in this conversation.
Yeah, there are a number of female professionals that would tell you that you were wrong.
That's not going to win him the election either way, brother. So what you need to start getting your head wrapped around is that he is very likely to lose the race, or if he does win it, he's going to win it by the skin of his chinny chin chin and be so weak and hobbled by the time he takes office. He's not going to be able to do anything more than he did his first term. The time when he was at his apex, okay, was his first 3 months in office, okay? And if black people wanted to get something done at that time, that was the time to get it done. But everybody was upset because they didn't get their free Obama check in the mail or whatever the hell it was. And you had, what's the guy's name? You had Tom Joyner out there. You had Tavis Smiley. Yeah, the professor. What's the professor's name with the glasses? I can't think of his name
right now.
You know what I mean?
Hold on. I got another caller on the line. Hold that thought. Hello, caller. Thank you for calling. Let's talk. What's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going, guys? My name is Ryan. I'm out here in Olympia. I got a Blog Talk Radio station myself, The Sound of Freedom, but I like, you know, tuning in to different people, hearing what they got to say. I just have a question, and I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say about it. If
okay.
the United States of America didn't have socialized medicine for 230-some years, is it possible that it's going to work now? Like, do you think it's still possible for us? Is it going to work, or is it destined to fail?
You know, let me say this. This is Jay speaking. And as I mentioned earlier, I've been living in Germany over 40 years, so I've been living under the system, so I know that the system can work, okay? It might not end up in its present form over the next 5 or 10 years, but it's better than having nothing at all for some of the things that we spoke about before you got on the call.
Yes,
right, okay.
I have to agree with
you. Well, thank you so much for answering.
I mean, yes, it will work, but as Jay say, you know, it may not end up the same way, but before it can work, everybody has to be on board with it, and that's the problem we're having right now. Everybody's not on board.
And well, in a capitalistic, in a supposedly capitalistic country, we're supposed to be capital, or be, you know, through use capitalism, supposedly, is it possible to use socialized medicine in a capitalistic economy?
Well, I mean, I would disagree with the premise of your question, because I think with the first brother, he mistakenly thinks I'm anti-health care. No, I just think it's not going to – I don't think the way it's currently set up is going to work. But we do have socialized health care already. Okay, Reagan passed into law the Emergency Medical Labor Act, whatever it was. I forget what it's called, but – he passed into law in 83, 86, the law that basically forced every single emergency room to pass out free health care to anybody who walks in those doors, as long as they were experiencing a quote-unquote emergency. And the way emergency was
right.
defined was so loose that anybody walking in with a tummy ache was going to receive care. Now, he didn't set up a system of payment. He just told the hospitals they had to do it. And what the hospitals did to make up the money they lost by giving out those free services were basically to raise the cost of services and everybody else, you know, coming to the hospital, or to pass on the loss of the tax write-off back to the federal government, which means the taxpayers, or
right.
allows to raise everybody's insurance. But, I mean, so we've had socialized health care for a long time. We just haven't had a really good way to pay for it.
Well, I think that... It's not really the policy that's coming into place that's the problem. I think it's the cost of what it takes to actually get the work done. You know, there's so many kids and so many,
right.
you know, single parents out here that don't have insurance because there's no policies to support them. So, I mean, if we had these hospitals and these independent insurance companies bring their prices down, maybe the cost of health care by itself would go down and it'd be a little bit more feasible for everyone.
Well, that's still socialized, because if you have the government set the price and it's not set by the free market, that's still socialized medicine at the end of the day. The free market has set the price for, you know, the services that are rented or whatever. So, I mean, that you can't do it that way. I mean, to me, the country is just too selfish generally anyway. So, you know, it's not in the nature of Americans to reach into their own pocket and pay for another man's health care. It's not in the soul of the country. It's adverse to who we are as people collectively. I'm not talking about you individually, but as people collectively, if Barack Obama was to propose a new law to raise everybody's taxes in the country by $1 to get every single one of these veterans off the street that we all claim to love so much, okay, he could raise $250 million to build homeless shelters every year around the country in every city for homeless vets all over the country. I only got to raise your tax $1 for every working adult in the country. People would raise hell.
Of course they will.
They would refuse to pay that dollar like it was their last dying breath. Okay?
Well,
you
don't
understand
that said,
what is in a country you really in?
To make you do it.
You have to force them at gunpoint. You have to hold their children
that.
Over hot coals to get that dollar. So if
because,
you think
but with the medical way it is, they're essentially forcing it on us, aren't they?
Yeah,
yeah, let me say this, because we can sit here and argue about on that one all day. Okay, it's the law now. Okay, so
right.
you know the problem is, and this is with every law that gets passed, there comes a point where it will be acceptable. It's just how to make it better, you know, mm-hmm. for everyone.
You know,
like I said before from the beginning, it's not a
perfect
plan.
Just because it's a law doesn't mean it's legit. I mean, what if they made a law
tomorrow
that says
slavery
is the U.S.
Supreme Court said it is legit. So now it's about making it better for everyone. You know, it's no longer as to, you know, is it legit?
So,
that's been cleared up. Now it's about making it better for everyone because it is not a perfect plan.
It's
the problem about politics. The gentleman that's
the specialist
on politics, the one thing about politics, and I think everybody on the line knows this, when something gets put on the floor in Congress, it never ends up being the bill that was actually put there. It gets changed along the way because there's a give and take measurement going on there. So
all the earmarks. I agree with that.
Well,
yeah,
okay,
no bill ends up being a perfect bill for whoever brought it up. It just
doesn't
happen.
Right, right. There's a lot of pork barreling and stuff like that, absolutely.
That's the war that the gentleman was talking about earlier. I'm sorry, sir, I don't remember your name, but that's the war that you were speaking of. That's held on the floor in Congress and in the House.
Okay, let me ask this question then. Being that we're talking about the health care and it's such a big issue, so is it a big issue because many people believe it will not work, or is it because of something else?
I can say right now for a lot of people I'm hearing is they're mad because they're being forced by the federal government to buy something, whether it's a pencil or health care or anything. They believe that the federal government does not have permission to force you to buy anything, and that's why they're mad.
Hmm.
If someone could get across to them, and I think this is probably the way it should have been approached, to actually explain what they're really paying for health insurance, okay? Because what they're soaking up from what I call the freeloaders is those that, you know, for some reason, you know, can't afford to pay for their health insurance. If they would start out explaining it that way from the mathematical side, it probably would have been easier for everyone to understand and accept. Here's the common sense factor, and I'm just talking about from insurance in general, okay? I don't care what the product is. If the more people that you have involved in that insurance product, the less cost it will be because it's spread. If you made health insurance car insurance and it was State Farm, okay, only so many people are going to have a car accident in 1 month or 1 year.
It's
and that's how the costs are set. And this
sense.
Is what people are not being told or hasn't been broken down to them.
What I'm saying is the federal government does not have permission to say you must buy health care, and if you don't, now you're going to get fined, and the IRS, of all agencies, the completely unconstitutional IRS, is going to come heckle you until you pay your fair share. I mean, that's why they're upset. The government doesn't have permission to do that.
I mean, it's
going to happen now. I mean,
you
just got to roll with it, right?
In the direction that I'm trying to keep you from taking it because it's very negative. All that has already been discussed. The problem is how we're going to make the health insurance plan better in the future. You can't change what's already happened. It's law. It's been pushed to the Supreme Court. They've approved it. So now it's about in the next probably 10 years, it's the next president's coming in, the next congressman, how they're going to change the program to make it better for everyone.
But brother, it's not the right approach. It's not the right approach for this country.
I'm sorry.
It's not the right approach for this country because of the nature of the country. Because people here are so inherently, I don't want to say selfish, but self-interested. So, you know, another way to do the exact same thing to get to the exact same place as you wanted to get to, because the problem was you had freeloaders. Okay, people making irresponsible decisions. Democrats have a habit of trying to force people who make, you know, unwise decisions into making wise ones. Okay, and that's the wrong way to go every single time. All you have to do is force those people to live with the consequences of the decision they made. So if you don't get health insurance privately, and you don't take the cheap government alternative, and you show up to a health care provider asking for care, you show up to a hospital room because you got shot Friday night in the club, and you don't have health care, and you opted out of the government program, you're an opt-out. So you're an idiot by definition. You don't have a catastrophic plan to help you out if you had a heart attack. You are a moron, okay? But you're still here in the hospital, and you need care. All you have to do is give the hospital the right to give the man the care and give that same hospital the right to place a lien against every single personal asset he owns. Everything he owns down to the stamps in his back pocket. And why do I say everything he owns? Because we don't know what the bill's going to be until the care is done. He could have a complication in the middle of the damn operation, okay? When we're done and we figure out what his bill is, he can pay the hospital in cash, or we will liquidate so much of his personal property we place the lien against to pay the bill. Now, if he has no personal assets, he gets a roaming garnishment, which means it follows him everywhere he goes until the balance is paid. Anybody who pays him under the table, that means any employer, has to pay double the amount that he owed to the hospital.
Okay.
Well, to the government, okay? So my program gets you, but it's more in line, okay? Something like my program is more in line with the way Americans think about money and sharing and community. It's just the nature of the country.
Okay? Yeah, I agree. Now, here's this. I mean, isn't it a moral issue? It's a moral issue, how we are being selfish and how we look at individuals and we look down upon people we don't know and stuff. I mean, wouldn't you say that's a moral problem? And that can't be fixed by government rules and regulations, can it?
All right, no, just, what you can fix is just stick him. If he made a bad decision, stick him with the consequence. He made a bad decision. He didn't have health insurance. He's a moron. Okay, the hospital gets a lien. I don't mean he got to go to court to get a lien. I mean the day you show up and sign for the service you received and you don't have insurance, there's an automatic lien. Your check account, your checking account's frozen. Saving account's frozen. Home equity account's frozen. The ownership from the car changes from your name to General Hospital. The mortgage on the house changes from your name to the hospital. Everything goes over to them.
That's why they wanted the national health care program, so people don't go broke if they get a hospital bill that is not financially possible to handle. Okay, that's why. So
that's,
you know, a hypothetical you made.
Though,
the reason they came up with the national health program is because people were losing their homes already. Okay, those that had health insurance and the health insurance ran out. Say as an example, they had terminal cancer or something like that. Okay, and so their families will end up getting stuck with those huge hospital bills. That's what your national program was set up to keep people, that it would not happen to people anymore in the future. That's what it was set for.
All right,
one of the reasons it was set for, and let me correct what I just said.
All right, hold your thought for a minute. Let me bring Mr. Solution online, okay?
Sure, go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Solution.
I'm going to get going, guys. It was great talking with you, though.
All right, thanks, man, for calling. Mr. Solution.
Yep, take it easy.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, you online, man. Go ahead.
Well, let me just start with asking a question. May I ask, what are we trying to resolve here?
Well, we're just discussing basically today's topic was
racial harmony in the United States. Does it
and we end up on Medicare.
So we're talking about Medicare. I mean the new healthcare thing right now, law.
Right.
Yeah. But the topic of the show is racial harmony in the U.S. Does it really exist? Of course, we done rolled over to the healthcare about Yeah. So that's where we are now.
All right. So healthcare. What are you guys? I'm trying to understand. What are you actually – you're just talking about what happened? You're trying to get health care? You're trying to determine if it's possible to pay for it? Where are you going with it?
There were three different opinions. One of the gentlemen just left, and he kind of pushed us more in that direction. I thought that conversation was really over with as to the fact that it was forced upon Americans, it wasn't really legal. And, you know, I basically said that, hey, we've gotten past that. Now it's about making the program better in the future. And it'll probably take 10 years to really see the true costs that are saved by the health care being in place, the affordable health care, excuse me.
Yeah, well, in my humble opinion, I just pulled up the U.S. debt clock. And I encourage people to go there just to get an idea of what we're talking about. You know, the debt is it's impossible to pay the debt off. Right now it stands at $15,928,000,000,000, and then you have a few million, $361 million. So the thing of it is, that's a foregone conclusion. We're just living in debt. We're going to have to live with it until the big kaboom occurs. That is, you just can't service the debt. But look, this has some fundamental tributaries that I think a lot of people are not aware of. The AMA falsely spikes the cost of medical care by limiting the number of doctors that are available to provide care, first of all. That is artificially manipulated. The reason doctors' salaries are so high, and that is one area that has to be looked at, it's not just because that's the way it's supposed to be, it's because those costs are artificially escalated due to the fact that the AMA limits the amount of doctors. What I'm saying is there could be probably double the doctors that there actually are. I don't know if you guys were aware of that.
No, I was not.
No, I was not.
Okay, well, you go to the AMA website and you check them out. They are the ones who license doctors. You follow that? So if they limit the licensing process, they know it's like supply and demand.
Right.
When you have
economic protection.
Hello?
Yeah, I heard someone commenting, so I just waited.
It's economic protectionism. I understand.
Right. So that's a problem right there that very few people either are aware of and even fewer really talk about. So the AMA is a big problem in the number of doctors that it will license to actually provide the health care. The other thing is I'm looking at the unfunded liabilities, which include total U.S. unfunded includes Social Security, prescription drugs, Medicare, Part D, and Medicare. So that's at $119 trillion. So you think of these numbers, trillions of dollars. We should only be using that referring to the distance between celestial spheres, not in terms of dollars. This is impossible to pay off, and let me just give you an idea why it's impossible. If you just go with the national debt, and that's what we're ultimately talking about, I think, is money. If you just go with the national debt, okay, at $15 trillion, your share of that debt is $184,344. That's your share, all right? Of the unfunded liabilities, your share is $1,051,000. Do you have a check for that?
Oh, no, not at all.
Well, now, understand, this is what you, your children, this is what every individual, right now the U.S. population is 314 million. So that's the way they come up with that figure, divided by the national debt and also divided by the unfunded liabilities. So the point is you're doomed financially. There's not that much money in the entirety of the United States. And it would be immoral to take everybody's assets that they need to live on to pay off a debt that, the point of it is that would just be patently immoral. So what are we going to do now? Now that you have, and this is, you can check this out. It's at U.S. Debt Clock, one word, U.S. Debt Clock, debt, debtclock.org, and those figures are there for everybody to peruse.
Okay.
Be back.
All right. Well, I understand. We done had this conversation before, so I do understand what you're saying.
Well, I mean, but, can I just make a point to the brother, though?
Well, go ahead, man. Go ahead, Ray.
I understand what he's saying, that, you know, it's impossible to pay off the debt, but it's not only impossible, it's also unnecessary. It's not debt that ever has to be paid off. How is debt ultimately collected? It's collected by force, right? At the end of the day, if you don't pay your rent, the only way the landlord gets the rent, okay, is by having the court force you to pay, or by having the sheriff take your ass out of the apartment and throw you in the streets. How's a car dealer get you to repay the money you owe them on the note you didn't pay? Well, they come get the car. But however you think about it, there is no way to collect debt without force, okay? Now, China is not about to come over here and force us to pay anything. So at the end of the day, the only consequence would be a drop in the country's credit rating, which has already happened, which is, you know, at the end of the day, really inconsequential because people really have no place else better to put their money until they deal with it's going to come here. So, I mean, really, at the end of the day, it ends up being a lot of hyperventilating about a lot of nothing. And really, I don't really see any legal principle that makes every single citizen responsible legally for the debts of the United States. We aren't co-signing this on. I mean, so people like to throw around the number that, oh, we are all individually responsible. I just don't see any circumstance in history where it's ever happened, and I really don't see a circumstance in the future, you know, where it would happen. So, I mean, it, you know, it's, I think it's fine for people to, you know, be afraid about it, but it is what it is. A lot of the money goes to corporations and tax breaks. People like to focus on the fact that some of the money has gone towards, you know, paying for Social Security or Medicare or social programs. They love to focus on that. The amount of money that hasn't been collected from corporations that enjoy all of the security of this country, the protection of waterways for the transportation of their goods, construction of roads upon which they use to transport their goods, security in downtown areas for customers and making the stores to buy their goods, all these free services, none of which they pay for, when they get tax break after tax break, and all that money that isn't collected from them, that is otherwise borrowed from China, ends up going towards that debt. So, you know, I disagree with the focus of always mentioning the social programs and then mentioning the debt so as to, and, you know, indirectly make the point that all the social programs are the sole cause of the debt, as if there is nothing else contributing to it, because it's not true. It's just not true. The debt is not solely made up of poor people and freeloaders in the country, you know, taking money they shouldn't otherwise get. We didn't borrow all that money from China just to have black people buy Jordans and fried chicken wings. That is not the sole cause of all those trillions of dollars. It's gone to some other places. That's
the point. While that's true, I think that deviates from the point that you and I need to understand. And particularly with blacks, I think this is a conversation with American blacks that really is kind of, you know, useless. What American blacks need to be discussing, in my humble opinion, are family and family and business. How they, blacks have the highest unemployment rate of all people, and it's nearly double that of, say, whites. And so what and again, and this is the way this relates to you, because you attempted to say that the debt is just kind of up there or out there and it doesn't really have an impact on the individual. I'm going to say two things to that: taxation and inflation. That's where it's going to nail your pocketbook. You're going to pay higher taxes on the money that is inflated, which means you may have the same number of dollars, but guess what? Those dollars don't purchase the same amount of goods and services. That means your standard of living will be reduced.
I'm going to say this, and believe me, I'm not trying to be smart when I say this, but if you don't have a job, taxes don't mean nothing anyway.
Well,
okay.
Here, here. I see no fault in his reasoning.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm not trying to be funny when I say that, but you know, it's just reality. So
why do
you know,
bring that up, though? I'm just curious. Why would you? I would assume, even though the unemployment rate among blacks is at 25%, which is very, very, very high, that's at the same level it was at during the Great Depression for whites. So. Why would you say to the 75% of blacks who are employed, maybe a percentage of them are underemployed, but why would you say taxation and inflation doesn't mean anything to them? Or had you thought about that?
Because what's more important to me is trying to find solutions to stop black-on-black homicides in America.
Well, part of that is due to lack of economic viability.
Which comes from lack of education.
Well, sure, yeah, I agree with that. That's
it's
why I
no
say
education,
family,
no job.
Family and business. Family business.
I just said no education, no job. So therefore, we kill each other. Okay, the young sir, what is your name? The guy that's been on the longest with that.
Ray. If you're asking for my name, it's Ray.
Ray, okay, Ray was saying, oh, gosh, I lost my thought. I apologize. I'm looking at the clock on this show, and I wish it was another hour because this conversation is getting very deep. I hate to use the word catch-22, but I can't think of another. It's a losing triangle right now because in one situation you have lack of education, which is causing lack of jobs. You have a system that's sending black men to jail at epidemic numbers, and then you've got an epidemic rate of black-on-black homicide. So you tell me how we get out of this cycle. Dr. Solutions? I think that's what they said your name was.
I mean,
okay, I didn't know you were directing that at me. Look, how does one eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Okay, so which problem do we attack first? Do we attack the fact that the education? I'm gonna pick the cities just for a second here. Okay, is under par. Do we attack that one first? Do we attack the school to jail pipeline first? Do we attack the number of black homicides that are at a unthinkable rate? Okay, which one do we attack first?
Okay, this is in basic life. Now, hopefully your question is not rhetorical, and it's an actual question.
No, it's an actual question because
all right, allow me to respond to it.
Go ahead, please.
All right, thank you. Okay, just going back to basic logic and basic problem solving 101. First, identify the problem. There's a branch of science known as synectics that's critical problem stating and problem solving. Using all of the sciences, both natural, applied, and social sciences, to resolve your problem. So it's going to take everybody. I'm amazed that just having a few people talk, how they miss so much, but they do cover quite a bit. So the point of it is, there's got to be inclusion, there's got to be open-mindedness. There's got to be a desire to actually communicate to consensus. That's going to be crucial. Can two walk together except they be agreed? Answer, no. Yeah. So going to have to – I'm sorry, did someone say something?
No, there was a laugh there. That was all. Go ahead.
You're going to have to communicate.
That was all. Keep going.
Thank you. You're going to have to communicate to consensus, and it starts right here with you and I. One of the most One of the biggest problems, in my opinion, that American blacks make is they don't quote each other. That means that every time something valuable is said, it's lost in the universe. No one picks it up. No one repeats it because everybody is trying to outmuscle everybody else, the old crabs in the barrel mentality. But the thing is going to be critical problems stating, identify your problem, then apply all your different powers to resolve that problem. And that's going to relate to our communicating with each other, liking each other just enough. And that's a big thing, by the way, liking each other just enough to start something, i.e. some sort of business or enterprise, that enhances us both. The reason blacks really kill each other, again, in my opinion, murder each other, and that is true at a higher rate than any other group, and that's based on 100,000 headcount, is because when a black person looks in another black person's eyes, they don't see any way that person will ever contribute to them. And that's true because everything that blacks get, they get it from other people. Dr. Claude Anderson is a very good source. He's a businessman. He talks about business. He knows business. He has a book out called Powernomics, and that is a plan for black Americans to actually identify their problem. Their problem is basically economic. All of blacks' problems stem in economics. Now, you could probably argue that there are moral issues, the reason they can't even face the economic issue, but certainly most of the black problems are rooted in economics. So those are some ideas. Start talking to each other. Start, you say you believe in God, but really do you? God has to be manifested in each other, the ones in whom his image is stamped. And blacks lie about that, like a rug. They talk about God, but they disrespect each other wholesale, i.e. the high murder rate. So the thing of it is to start talking with each other. In conversation, there's a tremendous amount of power. There's just untapped. Communication is like the atom of energy. Most blacks are horrible communicators. They don't know anything about communicating. Communicating means a desire to hear what the other person has to say, communicate with that person, and grow as a result. Not just entertainment, not just ass-scratching, not just kidding around and joking around. The English language is designed to be a scientific language, a critical statement of facts, only interrupted by a question, interrogatory, to get enough information to state a fact. That's what English is. It's a very powerful language. That's the reason it's the international aviation language. It's the international business language. A lot of people don't know that. So those are some ideas just to get one started. And remember, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with what? The first step.
First step?
Yep. The first step. And one of the things that I've offered, and we can do this on the honor system, and I talked to Eric about it, and he said he agreed at the time. Maybe he still does. Before you offer advice to anybody, have all of your bills paid, current. Have 1 year's reserve, and having had an elimination, commonly known as a bowel movement, in the last 12 hours. Why do I say that? Because if you owe people, you're not focused. You can't be focused. You're distracted. You're under stress. You belong to those people whom you owe. And they let you know that, by the way. And secondly, if you haven't had an elimination in the last 12 hours, some black folks haven't had an elimination in the last week. If you haven't had an elimination in the last 12 hours, you're toxic. So you can't be distracted and toxic and give another person advice. And moreover, your advice isn't working for you if you don't have those three things in place. Your bills current, and this is what financial planners tell us. You should have 1 year's reserve so that should anything happen, you won't be stressed out. You think about that.
You know, that was well spoken. Okay. Does that bell mean my time up already?
5 minutes. You got 2 minutes. Let's go.
Time to go.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess we have to save it for another show. It sounded good, but it still didn't get to the root of the problem or the solutions, okay? Number one, for the high homicide rate, but that had to be another show, okay? It sounded good, though. Sounded very good.
Well, if I could just also piggyback on what the brother just said, and this is not to muscle the doctor. I think he is very well-spoken and very eloquent. I'd like to hear more from him. But I think when you talk about the root cause, I don't think the root cause of black people's problems is economics. I don't believe that is the root cause of the problem. Because
no, I don't either. I have to agree.
If I could do as the great doctor just advised us to do, I will quote a black man right now, okay? As Cedric said in the last Barbershop movie when they were talking about reparations and giving every black man in America $50,000, what Cedric said was, what they're going to do except make Cadillac, the richest car country. Okay. You throw a lot of money at a person who doesn't know what in the hell to do with it, and that's not going to fix their economic problems either. Okay, that's why you got Scottie Pippen broke. That's why you got Allen Iverson broke. A lot of guys have made the dollars flow through their fingers, and they're still, their problems still haven't been fixed. So, you know, I'm not sure that economics is really the root of the problem. And I am familiar with Claude Anderson's Powernomics series. I have seen the video series. I have not read his books just yet. He's with the Harvard Institute, so I am familiar with the brother. But, I mean, even he has said that the way in which Latinos have put together a unified front and completely outmaneuvered blacks, despite their economic circumstances, which in some cases are even worse than blacks. If you've ever been to, you know, poor parts of California, poor parts of Texas, make some of the Detroit ghettos look like Beverly Hills. They have been able to do that because they are unified. And, I mean, I think that, you know, they're not completely unified. You got Mexicans who, you know, are kind of looked down upon by Colombians because they have darker skin. They still have that light, dark skin nonsense that we have. But I think they have this continuity of language that kind of binds them together, or at least, you know, a shared culture that blacks don't seem to have. And so we have a greater crabs in the barrel mentality than I think a lot of other minorities. And if you just look at the way Latinos have just scooted right past us to be the number one minority in the country, really, despite the fact we were the first minority in the country, it's stark.
And but how have they scooted past you?
We did still. I mean, well, they're getting their policy.
Can I answer that real quick?
Okay, gentlemen.
Because they're having more babies, number one.
Okay, gentlemen.
Well, they got to cheat a little bit because, you know, Mexico's right there on the border, so they can increase their voting base, you know, exponentially by just having people run across the border even faster and we can have babies. I'll give you that. But at the same time, they don't attack each other publicly or their politicians publicly in the way we do. The way I heard black people going after Barack Obama 2 months or 3 months in to his term, we didn't give him the first year. Cornel West was the guy's name I was trying to remember before. Cornel West, Tavis Smiley, Tom Joyner, all these prominent black men with prominent black voices ripping him asunder 3 months in. It's not something that the folks on the other side are likely to do. The reason why Sarah Palin is so effective is because she knows no matter what she does, her people will never turn on her, at least publicly in that way, to erode the foundation below her feet. They won't do it. And the simple fact of the matter is, which running back do you think is going to get more yards in the game? The one who gets the ball and has given some blocks, or the one who gets the ball and gets kicked in the back of the legs every time he leaves the line?
Yeah, but what's the manifestation of Hispanic power? What is that?
The manifestation right now is the fact that they are the most sought-after minority vote in the country, which means they have a much larger voice in having their agenda heard and enacted than blacks currently have right now. No one is vying for our vote. I don't think anyone particularly cares about our vote one way or the other, and that makes us politically forgotten, and that is dangerous.
Okay. I've heard that money is the mother's milk of politics, but you still haven't defined the manifestation of Hispanic or any other ethnic group's power. I say
they seem to be certain about a loyalty and unity inherent in those groups. They just don't seem to rip each other apart in the same
right,
way.
Right, but manifested in their economic clout.
I mean, you mean they're not, when you say economic clout, you mean they're not rich yet?
They have businesses that you and I have to support because we don't have businesses. In other words,
they have businesses that their own people frequent because, you know, you and I could have all the money in the world. We prefer to have an Arab, a white doctor than a black doctor, or a Jewish criminal lawyer versus a black lawyer.
But notice what I'm saying, and I'm going to just give you guys something to think just quickly about. There's usually not one well-stocked grocery store that's black-owned in any black community. Think about that for a moment. What is more common to you every day than one or two meals? Now, obviously, many of us are gluttonous and we eat too much, but you've got to eat to survive. All of those groups have grocery stores that you and I have to patronize. Why? Because you and I don't have them.
All right. Well, thank you. I want to thank y'all. We're out of time right about now, but we still have the chat room open if you want to continue the conversation. But we'll continue this tomorrow. So if you gentlemen want to join back tomorrow, come on. We'll be more than happy to. All right?
All right.
Well, I want to thank y'all, and I'll see y'all tomorrow on Let's Talk.
What time?
2 p.m. Central.
All right, thank you, sir.
All right, thank you.